Next case is 001824, State of Ohio, XRL LTV Steel Company versus the Industrial Commission of Ohio and John H. Harubin. Mr. Jaffe.
Please the court. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. I will refer to the code that's involved in this case as 34D, skipping the preliminary parts. I'm going to address 3 points. Point one, the hearing officer in this case acted consistently with the permanent total rule. Point two, the hearing officer in this permanent total case has authority to consider changing physical condition or deteriorating physical condition. And point three, that the Court of Appeals misapplied this rule and improperly limited the authority of the hearing officer. Let me start with point one, that the hearing officer acted consistent with the rule. And in order to understand this, you need to understand that the rule itself, the order itself, very clearly says that this hearing officer considered 34D1. And decided that it did not apply. And decided that it did not apply because at the time of the hearing, this man's condition was such that he could not do any kind of work. The order itself is found in the supplement of the claimant at pages supplement 2728. I'm talking supplement 28. The order clearly says that this man did not have the physical capabilities to accept the job that had been offered to him. The rule itself speaks in terms of the present. It does not speak in terms of the past.
Counsel,
so, yes, ma'am.
Could you clarify just one point for me? Did the award that the hearing officer gave, did he give an award from the time the offer was made to the point that he became, in according to the testimony, totally disabled? Or did it start with the period of total disabled?
Let me try to explain it. My understanding is the hearing officer started the permanent total award with the date of the doctor's letter, Dr. Caffin, spelling out the physical deterioration. And what happens in the case typically, so you understand how this thing works, is the hearing officer, of course, hears the evidence from both sides. The hearing officer then is in a position that he needs to make a decision. And in this case, the hearing officer decided, one, that this man was permanently totally disabled, and that's how he starts the order. The man's permanently totally disabled, and he decides that the physical condition of this individual has deteriorated, and he goes on at the end of the order to spell out that D1E does not apply, because the man doesn't have the physical capacity at the time of the hearing to do that order. Once he's made the decision, once the hearing officer makes the decision that he's going to award permanent total, he then has a second step to follow. And the second step is, what is my starting date? And in this instance, what the hearing officer did was to look back. He saw Dr. Caffin's report as clearly showing the deterioration, the decline of this individual's physical capacity. He also saw that there was a period of time when there was an offer outstanding that could have been, the man could have done some work, and he denies permanent total disability for that period of time on that basis. That's what I think happened in this case. And I think it is consistent with the rule. And I think the Court of Appeals misinterpreted this rule so that it took away from the hearing officer jurisdiction to decide the facts being in dispute, what is this man's physical condition at the time that he is here at the hearing? Is he permanently, totally disabled or not? They took that away, and they, I think, incorrectly decided that in order to do this, one had to go through the process step by step, and if you get to step E, which is the one dealing with a bona fide job offer, if you get to step E and you determine that there was extant a bona fide job offer, cut it off. There's no way to consider anything more. Yes, sir.
You anticipated him asking a question. The hearing officer left a gap. There is PTD awarded here, but the issue is whether it should have been awarded for the period from when the company offered the different employment and when there was a report from the doctor saying the claimant is permanently totally disabled.
I don't think there's a gap at all. I think the hearing officer covered the entire period of time. Part of the period he denied permanent total, part of the period he granted permanent total.
Yeah.
So I don't see a gap as such.
Counsel, in some of our recent cases, we've held that if you leave employment, you go somewhere else, and then you deteriorate because of the injury on the first job, you can go back to the first job to get recovery, correct?
I think what you said is correct.
How is that different then from this situation where he doesn't work but he's not also getting any recovery during that period? Is there a difference in the treatment?
I'm not sure really that I followed the question. Go ahead.
We held, okay, you don't take, you get a bona fide offer to go back to work. You don't take it because you get a job somewhere else. And we reconsider that decision and decide you can go somewhere else and work. It doesn't cut off
right. Your
ability to recover in the future if you deteriorate.
Right, that's the Baker case.
And so, you know, the person deteriorates, you can go back to the employer that caused the injury and get recovery for the workers' comp. How is that any different than this, as long as you don't give that person any recovery for the period they turned down a bona fide offer?
I suppose thinking in that fashion, there isn't any real difference. There is here, however, the same employer rather than a different employer. There is an employer here, LTV Steel. It is clear, I think, from all the medical reports that this man cannot do the work that he did before. There's no disagreement on that. The only place there would be disagreement is what is the effect of the bona fide offer if it were a bona fide offer. And I would submit there's reason to think it's not really a bona fide offer, but that issue was not raised, and so I'm not going to raise it here. But in essence, what I'm saying is that the hearing officer does have jurisdiction. He's got to decide the case. And I don't think this rule does as the Court of Appeals says, because the Court of Appeals basically says if you refuse a bona fide job offer, you're done forever. The rule itself doesn't say anything about being done forever. The rule itself doesn't speak in terms of time, other than this rule, that is D1E, is written in the present tense. And because it is written in the present tense, the hearing officer properly applied it, looked to the man's condition at the time he was there at the hearing, and determined that this man did not have the physical capacity to do any work, including this job offer that had been made to him.
Did the treating physician ever release him to go back to work?
No. When this is one of the reasons I say I'm not sure that there's a legitimate job offer here. And I'll talk about that for a second. Dr. Altomi, the operating surgeon, was very clear. And I should say this about Dr. Altomi. The company sent him a copy of that job offer so he could review the job description to determine if his patient of his could do it. And Dr. Altomi clearly responded that this man was permanently totally disabled, could not do any kind of work, and so the company was apprised of that. The reason I say that I don't know if there was a legitimate job offer is when you look at the offer as made by the company, LTV, they talk about this man having to go out there four or five times in an hour to mark some steel coils. It's not until you get down to the LTV second vocational report which I think you find in the second supplement at pages 59 and 60, that you see that he's not just going out there four or five times. That's an erroneous job description.
But that issue is really not
before. That is correct.
We have to accept, for the purposes of this legal issue, we have to accept that he had a bona fide offer, didn't take it, then became disabled. Is there continuing jurisdiction?
Yes, ma'am.
That is correct.
That is exactly correct.
But you don't even have to use the continuing jurisdiction section under 52, do you? You just apply 38, and it's clear, isn't it?
It's. I think that is absolutely correct. I look at it and say there is inherent jurisdiction or a regional jurisdiction of the hearing officer.
All this conversation about the interim period isn't even before us. It's the time from when he was declared PTD on, whether or not he's entitled to it, and the Court of Appeals said no.
That is correct.
That's all before us.
That is correct. I will reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. Ms. O'Halloran.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to clarify, because the appellant in his brief did raise the issue of continuing jurisdiction. I didn't know, based on the comments, if you wanted any remarks addressed to that, but I do think that it's important. The appellant raises the issue of continuing jurisdiction, but when you look to the statute, 4123.52, it's clear that it pertains to prior orders. The appellant is drawing that continuing jurisdiction in here and saying that that's applicable, but I think when you look to the very language of it, it's not. There's no final or prior order here that has to be changed. The issue before the hearing officer, as I think we all understand, was the issue of PTD. They weren't before the hearing officer looking for any kind of a change. The plain language of that certainly indicates that the Industrial Commission jurisdiction is continuing with respect to former findings or orders. That's not what was before them. This court has found continuing jurisdiction is not unlimited. You know, you must have changed circumstances, fraud, clear mistake of fact, clear mistake of law. I mean, there are a number of circumstances, none of which are applicable in this case. So I would argue that the appellant's reliance on the continuing jurisdiction is irrelevant, because that's not what occurred in the case before you. When you come to the rest of the matter here, it's the claimant's refusal to accept the job offer. There's no dispute of fact here. The OAC guidelines dictate that these guidelines in coming up with a decision on permanent total disability must be applied in sequential order. It couldn't be clearer. You go to one, you go to the second one. You know, the obvious intent here is to list decisive categories or factors that may in fact determine the issue. The first one of note is, you know, for example, the loss of limb, loss of limbs, loss of eyes, that sort of thing. I mean, those things, it's clear. That says you would be permanently and totally disabled. The list next goes to a number of other factors. For example, the claimant has engaged in sustained remunerative employment. The claimant is medically able to return to work. The claimant has voluntarily removed himself from employment. And then we come down to the next one in that sequential list is the one that's before you today. The employer offers and the claimant refuses to accept employment. That's exactly what happened here. There was a written job offer within the claimant's restrictions. Perhaps the reason for these orders is that, as you all know, permanent total disability is a compensation of a last resort. It's to be applied when all else has failed. That's not what occurred in this case. The employer did make a valid job offer to this claimant, and the claimant, his testimony was very clear. He refused to accept it, didn't even attempt it.
Counsel?
It doesn't.
Counsel, in this case, if he had accepted the bona fide offer and then he had deteriorated, there'd be no question that he got PTD, correct?
If the medical facts justified it.
Assuming that, sir.
Yes,
sir.
Assuming that.
So the only differing factor here is there was a bona fide offer which is not on appeal that he refused, correct?
Yes.
But he is not compensated by workers' comp for that period of time that he didn't accept the bona fide offer, did he?
Right, I believe that the hearing officer started it, and I don't have the exact date, but it was in 1997.
But it started from when the testimony, if you believe that testimony, he became PTD, correct?
The doctor was Dr. Caffin, whose report, that was the report that the staff hearing officer relied upon. I think that's the one you're addressing.
The legal question we have to look at is, somebody who turns down a bona fide offer for whatever reason, whether they it may medically be bona fide, but they don't think they can do the job, and or the, whatever the reasons are, your position says once you turn that job down, if you can't work later because of this injury, you're cut off. That's it.
Well, I would also challenge, as I think we pointed out in the brief, I would challenge the staff hearing officer's reliance on the report by Dr. Caffin. If you look to what Dr.
Let's not argue the facts of the case. Let's just argue the legal principle, okay? Under your legal principle, if they don't ever take the bona fide offer, and then within 1 month even, they become totally disabled, they're done, they can never get any more work. That's the position, that's the legal result of the position you take, correct?
The Ohio, the regulations do state that when the hearing officer is deciding the matter, that he must, that hearing officer must go in sequential order. That's the language of the regulations. That is what they say. That's what the appellate court said. But I think, you know, in this particular case, I do think you need to look further, is that the award based upon the report of Dr. Caffin is not substantiated.
So what is the answer to my question?
Okay. The question that you're asking me is if can they never do it again? It is my understanding that a claimant can, you know, like the discussion was earlier, if a claimant is temporarily and totally disabled, goes back to work, and there's another problem, can go back and get temporary total disability. It would be my understanding that the same could happen with permanent total disability, but the claimant didn't fulfill the initial requirement.
Let me ask you a question again. Turns down bona fide offer. 1 month later, becomes totally permanently disabled, cannot recover. That's your legal conclusion based on the principles you want us to follow.
It's obviously a tough one because I understand the import of permanent total disability, but I would argue that those facts aren't what we've got here. And that's why I'm having...
What you have here. Turned down the offer, became totally disabled. If you accept the evidence, and we're assuming for purposes of argument, you accept the evidence, can't ever recover.
I think the reason that I'm having trouble with your question is
it's
that...
Because it sounds very unfair.
It does sound very unfair.
Don't want to admit that because it sounds unfair.
You're right. I don't want to make it sound unfair, but I'm also stuck, as we all are, with what the regulation says. And if you read the regulation, that is precisely what it says. When that issue is right there before the hearing officer, and the hearing officer is mandated to go sequentially in that situation, that would be the end result. Obviously, I have trouble with it, as you do, because it does seem unfair. I also have trouble with it because I don't think that the facts in the case of Barr are as crystal clear as you portray them to be. I think when you do look at the report of Dr. Caffin, there are so many problems that arise with it, and that's also why I'm having difficulty answering your question, because it doesn't come, the facts aren't exactly the same. In Dr. Caffin's report, you know, he does say the claimant cannot return to his former position of employment. He does make a blanket statement the claimant can't engage in any employment.
Well, you're just disputing whether he is PTD or not. That's your fallback argument. But the legal
obviously
we have to decide today really isn't that difficult.
Right. And if you're pressing me to make a conclusory statement as to what I would say the legal position is, it is exactly as I've portrayed it, is that the hearing officer is mandated by those regulations to go in sequential order. If you go down that list, that is what the claimant did. It obviously is harsh, and it has harsh results, and I know the claimant would argue, well, wait a minute, my doctor said I can't do this job, and then that's overly harsh, and I think that's what the dissent was saying from the appellate court. The problem with that is it's certainly a medical question, but it's also a legal question. I mean, presumably this claimant is getting advice not only from his physician as to whether or not he can do the job or what his medical capabilities are, but presumably he's also getting legal advice throughout this. Is look, this is what you have to do to get permanent total disability, and that's what the claimant refused to follow that. That job offer was in, I believe it was in 1995. I mean, it was early on through this thing. 2 years go by. The claimant does not fulfill the legal requirements that he has to do in order to get permanent total disability. And obviously, I'm not a mean person. I would agree that it is a harsh result, but the claimant should have followed the law, should have followed the requirements.
Ms. O'Halloran, could you address the legal issue of whether or not there is some evidence supporting PTD from Dr. Caffin's report?
Yes, obviously I'd be happy to, because as I mentioned before, I think that there are some concerns there. As I started to say before, that Dr. Caffin does indicate that, he says that he thinks the claimant cannot engage in any work, but he couldn't go back to his former job. Then he comes up with a blanket statement, he can't do any work at all. But the problem with Dr. Caffin's report is there's no evidence at all that he reviewed the position that was offered to the claimant, and that's what's so critical in this case, because that job was tailored for the claimant. There's no information at all in Dr. Caffin's report that he saw the written job offer, that he looked at Dr. Kovach's reports. There are three of them, two in 1995 and one in 1996. Dr. Kovach's reports obviously look to the job offer, look to the claimant's capabilities. He looks at Dr. Taylor's reports. They're all looking back and forth, but there's nothing in Dr. Caffin's report that says that. There's a very detailed vocational report that was prepared. There's no indication that Dr. Caffin reviewed that. There's a very detailed job analysis that was prepared also. There's no indication at all that Dr. Caffin saw that. There was a videotape done of this recorder position, and there's no indication that Dr. Caffin saw that. What we have is merely his blanket statement, he can't do anything. But when you look at his report... I'm certainly coming to that, because what he also says is the claimant can lift up to 10 pounds, he can reach at waist level. I mean, there are some things that he says he can do. He can sit, stand, and walk for 3 hours each. That takes up this man's full day of work. Therefore, all of those fit within the job description. Those were the limitations that the company was looking to when this job position was fit. Therefore, the reliance on Dr. Caffin's report to say that this man has reached permanent total disability is not justified. And the staff hearing officer was wrong in doing that. The other factor that's out there is that there was a surveillance report done of the claimant after, it was in April of 1997, this would have been after Dr. Caffin's report, the claimant was videotaped walking long distance, pushing a child on a merry-go-round and swings, sweeping out his garage, carrying a bag in a box, and lifting and carrying a coffee table. Obviously, all of the information that was before the staff hearing officer, certainly leads to the conclusion that this man had not reached permanent total disability. Dr. Caffin's report does not reflect that he looked at anything else. And I think clearly that demonstrates a remarkable problem with his report and indicates why it cannot be relied upon.
Let me ask you, can the claimant here not reopen the case somehow?
It's my understanding that the claimant could reopen a case.
Could reopen. So that
if something happens down the line that he, as we were discussing before, yes, I believe that he can. He could refile. This is not an all or one kind of situation. But I believe that at the time that the decision was made, there were two problems with the staff hearing officer report. One is that he did not follow those things and did not follow the order and the regulations. And two, he relied improperly on the report by Dr. Caffin. The job offer met the restrictions that were imposed by all of the physicians, including Dr. Caffin. That's why the staff hearing officer's reliance on the report by Dr. Caffin was inappropriate. It would be the company's position that the staff hearing officer relied inappropriately on the report by Dr. Caffin, and that, in addition to the failure to follow the regulations in the sequential order as mandated, is what develops the problem with the staff hearing officer order.
How does one reopen the case? What's the legal?
I believe they could refile for permanent total disability.
And what would prevent the same conclusion from being reached that you're espousing? How do we open?
I suppose what would happen would be there'd be intervening circumstances. I mean, as in temporary total, if you've been awarded at once, returned to work, or reached MMI, something has to occur to indicate that either you've suffered another exacerbation or you've
got... That's what you're saying. The case could not be reopened unless some intervening circumstance occurred other than what has already occurred.
That would be my understanding, is something else has to have happened. I mean, just based upon the report of Dr. Caffin, obviously, based upon my criticisms of his report, I'd argue that can't be reopened just based on that. If the claimant suffers another exacerbation, if something else physically happens to him...
But if that happens, and he's already turned down a bona fide offer, isn't he still cut off?
I think at the time of the hearing... Except then you've got intervening circumstances, that something different has happened from the original time frame,
and
from the original decision.
And how does the fact that he turned out a bona fide offer affect an exacerbation. Let's say he has an exacerbation. Let's say he has something else happen and he gets worse. Now he files for PTD. Don't you come back and say, ah, but you didn't take the bona fide offer, so...
But if at that point his physical situation may be totally different, if at that point he suffered another exacerbation and the reports indicate that it's, for example, now he can't lift at all, he can't bend at the waist, he can't get up and walk, he has to remain prone all day, those factors, we're obviously talking hypotheticals, but those factors would impact the decision. And I would argue that at that point it's an intervening factor. Something else has occurred to change the circumstances from what had occurred earlier.
So if you were to accept their evidence, something intervening has happened. He has deteriorated. If you go sit strictly, let's say you don't believe the one doctor's report, you totally believe theirs, are you accepting then there has been a changed circumstance?
Perhaps I'd feel more comfortable in responding to that if Dr. Caffin's report, if I didn't challenge Dr. Caffin's report, perhaps I would be able to agree with that. That maybe at that point something, it shows that something different has occurred from the time of the initial job offer. And in this case, what I'm arguing is that there wasn't anything different because the restrictions...
Let's say the hearing officer said, I don't believe the other report at all. I only believe this one. I'm totally throwing the other one out. Then in your argument that you just made, the refusal of the bona fide offer would not prevent recovery.
I think a number of, because of the language of the regulation that speaks in terms of you've got to go in sequential order, obviously I have a great difficulty with that because that is what's mandatory. I mean, that's what the regulations are telling the hearing officers to do. However, you know, I think a couple of things would have to come into mind is, are we looking to the time frame that's evolved? Has something different occurred? And what I'm arguing, and I think that's why I'm having such difficulty with your question, is I'm arguing when you look at that report, nothing different had occurred. There may have been a difference in the
proposition of law in the abstract. We can't write just based on this set of laws. And let's say in the abstract, you had one report that found they had totally deteriorated and you didn't have any contravailing report. Is your position that the report that says he's now deteriorated allows them to reopen the case and recover, or does the refusal to take the bona fide offer prevent that in your sequential argument?
It's obviously a difficult question. I think the claimant's initial appearance, and that's the trouble that I'm having with it, if this is the claimant's initial appearance before the staff hearing officer, this is the only claim that he's ever filed for a permanent total, the hearing officer is bound to go and to follow those regulations sequentially. That's what the regulations say, and unfortunately it does have a negative impact upon the claimant. I hope that answers your question. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. O'Halloran. Mr. Jaffe, you saved about 5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, sir.
Just to clarify the question that you've been kicking around for the last couple minutes, our reading of that Court of Appeals decision is that it's over, it's done, it can't be raised anymore under any circumstances. So that we're reading that decision to say, once the Court of Appeals has figured out, and I think improperly figured out and taken the jurisdiction that was the hearing officer's jurisdiction, but once the Court of Appeals here figured out that there's a bona fide job offer and it stopped, at that point in time, using the sequential, whatchamacallit, this man is forever thereafter done. That's the way we're reading it. Now, let me say to you that when the company attorney stands before you and says that the sequential order was not followed, I think that's incorrect. I've looked at this decision rendered by the hearing officer, and he very clearly has looked to D1E. And he's very clearly found D1E does not apply. The very next to last paragraph clearly says the adjudicator further finds that Chapter 3, Section 1F of the Permanent Total Disability Manual is not applicable in this case because the duties of the recorder are not within the physical capabilities of the claimant as of the date of this hearing. So he has done that, and he has then gone on in sequence to that rule, which is D2A, which says if the man is unable to work, you declare him permanently and totally disabled. And that's what happened. The company may not be satisfied, but he followed the rule. And I think it is within his jurisdiction to determine the facts, not the Court of Appeals to determine the facts. That's how I came out of this thing. And when I look at the hearing officer, when I look at the company attorney telling you that this is a job tailored for this man, I have to disagree. Although in some ways I'm tempted to say, yeah, it was tailored. It was tailored to deny him permanent total. That letter, which is the letter going to this man and his doctor, clearly says in it, this is, quote, a job offer, unquote, made of suitable employment and is made in good faith. Now, that's not somebody in a steel mill talking. That's some lawyer talking. And then more interesting is the description of the job turns out not to be the description of the job as found later by the LTV vocational consultant. So that in terms of the job being tailored for this man, it was tailored to deny him permanent total. I don't know that the employer recognized that this was a continuing deteriorating situation. This man had had serious back operation. He continued after that operation with pain.
We understand
yes,
the facts.
Sir.
We've been through all that.
Yes, sir.
And I understand the PTD and the job offer and the hearing officer's report, and incidentally, the commission's decision, which, I think, as I recall, was unanimous. But what I'm curious about now is the peripheral issue, and I waited until it's just time is over. Do you think that 52 can be applied here?
Yes. 52 can be applied.
There has to be some intervening man.
Well, the reason I say 52, and as I said earlier when you asked the previous question, I think the hearing officer's got inherent original jurisdiction. He's got original jurisdiction under 4121.36, and that gives him original jurisdiction to determine. But in terms of 52, 52 starts out, and it is a compound sentence. 52 says the Industrial Commission has continuing jurisdiction. That's a sentence by itself. Then there's an and. And the and goes on, and has jurisdiction to modify previous orders. So that what the first sentence of 52 is saying, what I think it's saying, is one, you commissioners have jurisdiction over whatever is there in front of you at all times. In addition to that, to make it clear, you also have jurisdiction to modify previous orders.
So you can do this pursuant to 52, or you can do it pursuant to 38. Or you can do it to both.
Yes.
Okay.
That's basically how it come out. And I'll leave you with one final, hopefully a laugh and not a thought. I was impressed with the investigator's report that this man was pushing his child on a merry-go-round. It's been a long time since I've been on a merry-go-round. I don't know how you push somebody on it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffe. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.